Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Dion Gordon Podcast. I'm your host, the connoisseur of common sense, the purveyor of authenticity, and the man who calls it right down the middle, Dion Tyre Gordon. Enough of the bullshit. Let's get to work. Let's talk about the NBA Finals. Miami Heat, Denver Nuggets, not the NBA Finals we asked for, but it's the NBA Finals we got. And not just any NBA Finals. This is unofficially, this shall be known as the Dion Gordon Vacation NBA Finals. The last two times that I decided to venture out of this podunk, godforsaken, redneck, backwards-ass, piece-of-shit, boring, paint-drying, grass-growing town known as Mobile, Alabama, I decided to go to Denver, Colorado, and Miami, Florida. So unofficially, this is, like I said, the Dion Gordon Vacation Series. Nuggets fans and Heat fans, you're welcome. Your two teams have made it all the way to the NBA Finals because of me, because of my power of positivity, my aura, my chakra, my chi, my overall good vibe. I decided to bless both of your cities with my presence, and that motivated and inspired both of your local professional basketball teams to reach the apex of the National Basketball Association, the NBA Finals. The Miami Heat and the Denver Nuggets are fighting for overall global basketball supremacy, the right to call themselves the best in the world at what they do. And it's all because they've been inspired by the greats, Dion Tyre Gordon. You're welcome, Heat and Nuggets fans. Mobile, Alabama, you can suck my dick sideways. However, Denver, Colorado, Miami, Florida, you guys get the unofficial Dion Gordon seal of approval. You guys are awesome. Good weed, beautiful women, great scenery, shit to do, vibrant downtown nightlife, very friendly people, outgoing, cordial, affable, personable people. Unlike the uncultured swine down here in Mobile, Alabama, Denver, Colorado, Miami, Florida, can't wait to see you again. And this NBA Finals series between the Miami Heat and Denver Nuggets, I gotta be honest, I gotta come clean on this one. I didn't think it would be this competitive. Game one, I was correct in that assessment. However, game two was a fight, back and forth. Competitive basketball game. Great basketball being played all 48 minutes. 111-108 the final. Miami comes out on top, evens up the series at one game apiece, and we're going back to South Beach. Ooh, I got bars. Did you hear that? Say it again. Yeah, I'll say it again. The series is tied up at one game apiece, and we're going back to South Beach. Somebody give me a record deal. I'm a 38-year-old black man still chasing his rap career. Somebody signed me up. But anyway, Miami and Denver knotted up in one game apiece. Great basketball game last night. Miami came out hot from the field, couldn't miss, executed perfectly, and then Denver fought back, overcame a double-digit lead, established their own double-digit lead, 15 points to be exact. Miami storms back right before halftime to cut the lead to 6, 57-51 going into the locker room, and then the third quarter, and this is where I thought the game might get out of hand. I was really expecting Denver to emerge from the locker room and go on a Golden State Warrior-esque third quarter death run. Just come out and annihilate Miami and put them to bed. That's just the way it felt. That was the overall tone and tenor of the game. Miami came out hot, punched Denver in the mouth. Denver withstood it, fought back, retaliated with their own haymaker, their own uppercuts, had the lead going into half, and just felt like coming out the locker room at home, Denver, the crowd going crazy, the altitude being what it is. I'll say this real quick. That might be the most overblown storyline in professional sports history, period. The altitude in Denver, Colorado, to me anyway, this is just me talking. As I said before, I went there in December of last year, my first time ever going to Denver. And truthfully, I was concerned about the altitude because watching sports for so many years, I kept hearing about that. The thin air in Denver, Colorado, the vaunted thin air. I kept hearing about it's going to fuck you up immediately. It's going to cause you to be short of breath. your respiratory, your cardiovascular system is going to be challenged upon arrival in Denver, Colorado. I kept hearing about that. So many things being said about that. You always hear about that in every football, basketball, baseball game, hockey game, etc. How is the road team going to adjust and adapt to the altitude, to being 5,280 feet above sea level? I'm speaking from my own experience. Obviously, I'm not a professional athlete. I do work out about 4 or 5 times a week. I'm in pretty decent shape. Certainly not in the physical condition of a professional basketball or football player. I'm not anywhere close to being on that level, but just a regular, everyday, average Joe that works out 4 or 5 times a week, tries to take care of himself. I was concerned about the altitude. Then I got there and I'm like, this really ain't that bad. Like, this is not what I was told it was going to be. Like, I'm not fucked up at all. The only thing the altitude did to me was get me drunk faster, which is a good thing. You save money. You ain't got to buy that many drinks in Denver, Colorado. The only thing that really affected me was my alcohol tolerance went down. I'm a former 4-year veteran of the United States Navy. I'm a fucking sailor. You can tell by the way I talk. I'm a fucking sailor. I drank a lot in the Navy. Copious amounts of Hennessy being consumed on a daily basis. A functioning alcoholic working on multi-million dollar aircraft drunk off my ass. So alcohol, it's going to take a while to get me fucked up. But in Denver, Colorado, 2 drinks. That's all it takes. As I said, not a bad thing, though. You save money in that regard. So to me, the altitude has always been overblown. Just going there and being able to experience the altitude for myself, I feel like it's overblown. But anyway, Denver kind of had Miami on the ropes. And I felt like the third quarter was going to be pivotal, was going to determine and decide the game. And I was waiting for Denver to kind of blow it open. And it never happened. At the end of the third quarter, it's Denver 83, Miami 75. Miami hung around. They withstood the run that Denver tried to have. They hung around. It's an 8-point game going into the fourth quarter. And then Duncan Robinson comes off the bench and goes ballistic. He goes on like his own personal 10-0 run pretty much. And then Jimmy Butler started cooking. Bam Adebayo was excellent the entire game. Gabe Vincent, the leading scorer for the Miami Heat, 23 points of his own. Team basketball. I like the Miami Heat. I'm not a Heat fan. I'm a Laker fan. But I like, love, respect, and appreciate the Miami Heat. Team basketball. It's a collective. Heat culture is real. It matters. It means something. It starts at the very top, the godfather, Pat Riley. And then you have his first lieutenant, my man, Alonzo Mourning, former Miami Heat starting center, Alonzo Mourning, former Georgetown big man. Back when Georgetown actually meant something, we've fallen on hard times in recent years, but I digress. And then, of course, longtime head coach Eric Spoelstra, I'm going to go on record right now. I'm going to say Eric Spoelstra is a top 3 NBA basketball coach right now. I think Steve Kerr, I'm always going to give Greg Popovich of the San Antonio Spurs his proper respect, his just due, his acknowledgement. I'm always going to show nothing but the utmost respect for Greg Popovich. If you watch basketball and don't appreciate and respect and acknowledge Greg Popovich for the basketball genius that he is, you're not a basketball fan. It's just that simple. You don't know what you're talking about. You don't know anything about basketball if you fail to recognize that Greg Popovich is an elite basketball mind. I don't care how horrible San Antonio's been over the past couple of years. You win 5 championships, you've earned the benefit of a doubt. So Greg Popovich always gets that respect from me. Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich, and third on my list of the best coaches in the NBA, Eric Spoelstra. And these guys, that's the brain trust. Pat Riley, Alonzo Mourning, Eric Spoelstra, and everybody else falls in line. And they go out and they get certain types of basketball players. It might not be the most coveted guys coming out of college. It might not be a lottery pick, a number one pick, or whatever. Gabe Vincent came out the G League. Max Strus was with the Boston Celtics coming off the bench doing nothing. Caleb Martin. Kyle Lowry was an afterthought. People forgot about him. People left him for dead leaving Toronto. Nobody really cared about Kyle Lowry. Cody Zeller. Kevin Love. They got Kevin Love off the buyout market. Kevin Love was in Cleveland with the Cavaliers doing nothing, just wasting away. He was left for dead by LeBron and Kyrie Irving. They both split. Kevin Love has played in three NBA Finals before this. This is now his fourth NBA Finals appearance, and Spoelstra made a great adjustment, inserting Kevin Love into the starting five for game two, because go back to game one, and he had Caleb Martin out there in the starting five, and he was getting bullied and beaten and brutalized by my cousin Aaron Gordon. Okay, he's not really my cousin, but you know, you get the point. Aaron Gordon just absolutely mopped the floor with the smaller, diminutive Miami Heat basketball players in game one. And to me, I thought, and I still kind of feel this way, the overall size disparity, the overall height disadvantage that Miami has in this series still could be their undoing. Denver's a bigger, stronger basketball team. Physically, it's a mismatch. But then again, people thought the same thing about the Boston Celtics. Boston was also a bigger, stronger, physically more imposing basketball team than Miami. And what happened? Miami took them out in seven games. So I think at this point, people should learn by now to stop trying to discredit the Miami Heat. Take them seriously. Give them their proper just due and respect. This team has earned the right to be here. Gritty, tough, hard-nosed, well-coached. They play hard. The overall team effort can never be brought into question. Miami is going to give you a full 48 minutes every single time you step on the floor with them. The Miami Heat are like a dude that's about 5'5", 5'6", that gets into a fight real scrappy. And on the surface, you might look at that guy and say, well, what the fuck, man? This guy's 5'5", 5'6". He's fighting a guy that's 6'3", 6'4". That big dude should whip this dude's ass. You're 6 feet, 4 inches tall. You should be able to pick this motherfucker up, throw him in a trash can, put him in your pocket. This should be an easy fight, light work. Shouldn't take that long, but that little dude, that 5'5", 5'6" guy, puts up a fight. He might lose the fight, but you damn near got to kill that motherfucker in order to end that fight. That's the Miami Heat. They won't back down. And if Denver is going to win this series, they're going to have to earn it. And Denver on paper, the number one seed, home court advantage, bigger, stronger, physically more imposing. They got the best basketball player in the world in Nikola Jokic on their roster. They should win this series. I think they will in about 5 or 6 games, but it's not going to be easy, and Miami will not lay down and give them anything. Can we take the opportunity to give flowers to Bam Adebayo, the much maligned Bam Adebayo, coming into this series? A lot of people didn't give him credit, didn't give him a chance. Going up against Nikola Jokic, a lot of people said Bam Adebayo is about to get 7 different shades of shit beaten down his leg. Nobody gave Bam Adebayo a chance. He's been up and down throughout the entire playoffs. He's been somewhat inconsistent. Sometimes great game. Sometimes it's like, what the fuck? Sometimes aggressive. Sometimes passive. Not looking for his shots. But in this series, at least through 2 games, he's been the Miami Heat MVP so far. The best player in a Miami Heat uniform, Bam Adebayo. Last night, 21 points, 9 rebounds, 2 blocks. Solid basketball game. Now, if you're a stat nerd, if you're the kind of person that doesn't really watch basketball and all you do is look at the box score after the game, you might say, well, what the fuck are you talking about? This dude got his ass kicked. Nikola Jokic had 41 and 11 rebounds. Bam Adebayo didn't do shit. Why are you giving him flowers? If you're going to give him flowers, give him dead flowers. Don't give him a dozen roses. Give him some fucking daffodils or something like that. No, 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 no. Watch the games. Sit down and watch basketball. Put your phone down and watch the basketball game on your television. That's all you got to do. It's not hard. It's right there in front of you. If you watch the game, you'll see the impact of Bam Adebayo on the game. He's taking on the strongest challenge that Miami faces. Nikola Jokic, the aforementioned Nikola Jokic, the best basketball player in the world. And coming into this series, he had his way with Rudy Gobert. He destroyed DeAndre Ayton and made Anthony Davis an elite defensive player. 6 feet, 11 inches tall. He made Anthony Davis look pedestrian. So the popular thoughts, conventional wisdom led people to believe that Nikola Jokic was going to have his way against Bam Adebayo. And the numbers are impressive. A triple-double in game one and 41-point effort last night. But you can't overstate or undervalue what Bam does on both sides of the floor. He's playing 40 minutes a game, and he has to, because they got nobody else that could even obstruct or get in the way or bother Nikola Jokic. You saw what happened last night when Cody Zeller got in the game. God bless him. Cody Zeller is a nice basketball player. He's a good guy to have on your team. I like Cody Zeller, but come on. Against Jokic, his minutes on the court last night, Cody Zeller was a fucking abomination in limited minutes out there on the court in game two. He poses no threat whatsoever to Jokic. Bam Adebayo has to go at least 40 minutes in order for Miami to have a chance. You look at the foundation of the Miami Heat's offense, it's based and predicated on the three-point shots. They got a bevy of skilled marksmen on their team that can make threes. Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, Caleb Martin, Duncan Robinson, sometimes Jimmy Butler. That's what they do. The foundation of what they do is taking and making threes. Game one, they didn't go down. Max Strus, 0 for 10 in game one. Last night, Strus shot 4 for 10 from three last night. As a team, Miami shot 17 of 35 last night from three, 49%. When you shoot that volume of threes and make that many and shoot that high percentage, as Hubie Brown would say, you're going to win the game. You make 17 to 35 threes, you're going to win the basketball game. But how do they get open for all those three-point shot attempts? Who gets them open? Bam Adebayo, setting screens, sacrificing his body, getting in the way, and allowing his teammates to get open. His overall productivity and impact on the game, immeasurable. Defensively, and this is really where the impact comes in from Bam Adebayo. You think about what Miami likes to do. That overall fluidity, going back and forth between man and zone coverage, that's all about Bam Adebayo. When they go into zone, especially when they go into that matchup zone, Bam is basically the quarterback of all that. And he's able to switch on man coverage, communicate, keep his teammates on a string. And he's the anchor of all that. Bam Adebayo is the key to everything Miami does on both sides of the court. Jimmy Butler gets a lot of credit, and rightfully so. Even though Jimmy's been somewhat quiet, the first two games of this series and the last two games of the Boston series, not really playing to that same standard that he exhibited before that, but he's still making a strong contribution. Like I said, last night, 7 points in the fourth quarter. But really, to me, it's Bam Adebayo. And he's the man, he's the straw that stirs the drink, as Reggie Jackson would say back in the day. If Miami is going to win this series, it's going to be on the back and broad shoulders of Bam Adebayo. Think about what he's being asked to do. He's got to guard the best player on the Denver Nuggets roster and the best player in the NBA, Nikola Jokic. Protect the rim. Defend guards on switches. Quarterback the Miami Heat zone. Facilitate the Heat offense. Set about a million screens and make Nikola Jokic work on defense. In the fourth quarter, Bam Adebayo set 11 screens. And yes, somebody somewhere is keeping track of that shit. Specifically, The Athletic. I just read this stat off The Athletic. Bam Adebayo set 11 screens in the fourth quarter. Miami got red hot in the fourth quarter, scored 36 points, and won the basketball game. That matchup zone I was talking about, that Bam Adebayo was the quarterback of, that befuddled the Denver Nuggets offense, that handcuffed Jamal Murray, Bam Adebayo at the center of all that. The center of attention, Bam Adebayo. Can't give him enough credit. Give that man his flowers. If you're going to ridicule somebody and malign somebody for poor play or inconsistent play, when they play well, give them their flowers. Perhaps the biggest storyline coming out of game two was, yeah, Nikola Jokic had 41 and 14 rebounds, but he only had 4 assists. You go back to game one that Denver won 104 to 93. He had 27 points, 14 rebounds, 12 assists, triple-double. What do we learn from this? Basically, Denver can only win this series if Jokic has impact in every facet of the game, if he has a triple-double. Miami can't win this series if they allow Nikola Jokic to have a triple-double. He cannot have double-digit assists. Score all you want. Put up 41 points. It doesn't matter. You still lost the game. It's pretty much the Bill Belichick approach. For so many years, the New England Patriots would always, and Bill Belichick in particular, would always identify one thing the opposing offense did well and take that away. You're not going to do that this week. Case in point, quick example. The 2019 AFC Championship game on the road in Kansas City, Bill Belichick made it a point of emphasis to take away Tyreek Hill. Number 10 is not going to beat us. We're not going to allow Tyreek Hill to get over the top and beat us in the deep passing game. He's not going to beat us 40, 50, 60 yards down the field. Those big plays that Kansas City was so great at, not going to happen. We'll give you the underneath. You can have that. Travis Kelce can do whatever he wants. Travis Kelce can go out there and have 15 catches, a buck 50. He can have that. You can have that because that indicates that you had to drive the ball down the field methodically. A 12, 13, 14, 15 play drive. And at that point in Patrick Mahomes' career, he was impatient. He was always looking for the big, explosive highlight reel play. Bill Belichick understood that and said, you know what? You can have Travis Kelce and anybody else underneath. You're going to check it down. If you're going to win this game, you're going to check it down. You're not going to throw that 60-yard bomb down the field to Tyreek Hill or anybody else. Same thing for the Miami Heat. Nikola Jokic, you can have 41 points, and you can have double-digit rebounds, but you can't have double-digit assists. We're not going to allow the other guys to get involved. In particular, we're going to take Jamal Murray out of the game. The matchup zone and Jimmy Butler guarding Jamal Murray. Jimmy Butler is outstanding on defense. Jimmy Butler is always in the conversation of the best two-way players in basketball. So we'll give you Jokic. He's great. He's awesome. Spectacular. He can do whatever he wants to do. He had 28 points in the second half of that game yesterday. 28 points in the second half from a seven-footer, running, initiating the fast break, getting steals and turnovers, initiating the fast break as a seven-footer at 285 pounds. Having his way, go ahead. You can have all that. But Jamal Murray, nah. We're going to put the clamps on you. We're going to make you work. If you get buckets, if you do score, you're going to have to work your ass off to get it. And nothing's going to be easy. And everybody else, same thing. Michael Porter Jr., a ghost in game two. Aaron Gordon, nowhere near as effective. Because you're not playing against a smaller guy and Caleb Martin. Now you're playing against Kevin Love. Never quite known for his defense, but he is a bigger guy. 6'11", 7 feet, somewhere in that neighborhood. And he can at least physically obstruct what Aaron Gordon's trying to do. So now that we neutralized Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr., and Aaron Gordon, we've made Denver a one-man basketball team. And I don't care how good that one man is, one man cannot win an NBA Finals game, especially when as a collective, everybody on the Miami Heat is making a significant contribution. So can you replicate that three more times if you're Miami? Remains to be seen, but that's going to have to be the formula. Now, guys had open looks last night for Denver. The ball just didn't go in. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. That guy looked familiar last night. I don't know who I've been looking at so far in the playoffs in regards to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope because he's been playing out of his fucking mind. I don't know who that is. He played for the Lakers. I'm a Laker fan. I saw him play numerous games for the Los Angeles Lakers, and I swear to you, outside the bubble, he never played that well. For the LA Lakers, there were too many nights where KCP played 30 minutes It had maybe 2 or 3 points. Planet Fitness game, make sure you stop at the front desk on your way out and get your complimentary Tootsie Roll. Feel free to go to the vending machine and get a Coca-Cola at a fucking gym. Planet Fitness game, that dude last night, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, in game two, I recognize that guy. No contribution, no production, an idiotic, dumbass, nonsensical, devoid of intelligence basketball plays. In particular, he challenges Kyle Lowry 35 feet from the basket as the shot clock is waning down. 2 seconds on the shot clock, and KCP aggressively challenges him 35 feet from the basket, commits a foul. Lowry missed a shot, but still, you fouled him on a three. Go to the free throw line and make all three foul shots. Boneheaded play. Basketball IQ, non-existent. Where is it? That's the KCP I know. 6 points last night for good old KCP. 5 for Michael Porter Jr. There's no way Denver can win with that kind of production from two guys in their starting five. Jamal Murray, 18, but like I said, he had to work hard. He had to put in a 12-hour shift plus overtime, time and a half, to get that 18 points. It wasn't easy. Series tied at 1, game 3 back in South Beach, Miami, Florida. Wednesday nights, we'll see what happens real quick. Before the game, Commissioner Adam Silver was on NBA TV talking to Charles Barkley, Shaquille O'Neal, the host Matt Weiner, and my man Grant Hill about a mid-season basketball tournament that's going to start next season. A mid-season basketball tournament. For what reason? I mean, I do know the reason. Everything's about money. But apparently, in Adam Silver's mind, this is going to encourage and promote guys to play harder in the regular season. The way he framed it, the way he explained it to the panel, that it's going to mirror the midseason tournaments that take place overseas in soccer. And he's going to replicate that and bring that to the NBA. To basketball, it's going to be the same thing where guys are going to compete and play hard and be emotionally invested in this. And there's going to be financial compensation on the line as well as bragging rights. Commissioner Silver said they're going to take a section of regular season basketball games and then designate those games as tournament games, but it still counts toward the regular season. So this is already convoluted bullshit. And then he would go on to explain that the four teams that win this regular season midseason tournament would then go to a neutral site yet to be determined and compete for the midseason championship from there. Now, to me, in my opinion, that is what the whole thing really is all about. Neutral sites yet to be determined. Coinciding with the other news that came out today that the NBA is planning to expand to add 2 additional teams. NBA expansion. To me, just my opinion, just talking out loud, my own hypothesis, the NBA is going to use this fraudulent, convoluted, nonsensical basketball tournament in the middle of the season that no one asked for to gauge interest for potential expansion destinations. To me, the two leaders in the clubhouse as far as expansion is concerned are Las Vegas and Seattle. For many years now, ever since the Seattle Supersonics were taken away from Seattle, public demand has clamored for the Supersonics to go back to Seattle, a long-standing, traditional NBA basketball town, rich history, some of the greatest basketball players of all time. Once upon a time, put on a Seattle Supersonics uniform. Ray Allen, Kevin Durant's rookie season was in Seattle. A lot of people forget about that. Gary Payton, of course, the Rain Man, Sean Kemp, Detlef Schrempf, Sam Perkins. Of course, how could you possibly forget about Jim McElvain, Hersey Hawkins, and go all the way back to their championship team in the late 70s, Lenny Wilkins, who later became a legendary NBA basketball head coach. And for about 15 years now, ever since they moved out of Seattle, there's been no professional NBA basketball in Seattle. Now, they do have a WNBA team, the Seattle Storm, who are very successful, popular basketball team up there in the Pacific Northwest. They've won multiple championships over the years. Sue Bird, Lauren Jackson, Breonna Stewart, three of the best players in WNBA history. See, I watch everything. I could talk about pretty much every fucking sport. I watch everything. Salute to the WNBA, man. Dudes are always disrespecting that league. Those women work hard, all right? Just because there's no alley-oops, no in-your-face highlight reel dunks, doesn't mean it's not good basketball. I'm man enough, masculine enough to say, I like the WNBA. I fuck with the WNBA. If I'm bored as shit in the summertime and nothing else is on TV, sure, I'll sit down and watch a Connecticut Sun Indiana Fever game. I'll watch a Seattle Storm Las Vegas Aces game. My Las Vegas Aces, my favorite WNBA team, the reigning, conquering, defending WNBA champion Las Vegas Aces. You heard it here first. I got no shame in my game, but back to my point. Basketball does thrive in Seattle. Basketball is still popular in Seattle. The women's basketball team up there usually plays in front of a sold-out crowd. So that public demand, as I said, people up there are clamoring for a professional NBA team to come back to Seattle. A lot of longtime suffering Supersonic fans upset their favorite basketball team was taken away from them and sent to Oklahoma City. What better chance? The opportunity is right here, right now, for the NBA to right that wrong and give Seattle back their basketball team. Same team nickname, same colors, all that. Seattle Supersonics, bring them back. Las Vegas makes all the sense in the world. Gone are the days where professional sports leagues and the channels, the mainstream media outlets that cover them, pretend that gambling doesn't exist in professional sports. Those days are over with. You could turn on ESPN right now and hear somebody talking about gambling odds, the over-under, the spread, whatever, talking about something gambling related. My man Scott Van Pelt on the Late Night Sports Center, 11 o'clock, has a very popular segment on his show called Bad Beats, in which he documents and shows different occurrences in college and professional sports games that may have cost somebody somewhere a lot of money because they took whatever team, they took the over, they took the under, they took whatever the spread was, and then that team, the opposing team, scored a late touchdown or somebody dunked a basketball with 4 seconds left. Might have been a blowout basketball game, but somebody did something to fuck up the spread and cost somebody somewhere a lot of money. I can speak to that personally. Happened to me plenty of times. Most notably, 2011 NFL football season, Green Bay Packers, at that time defending NFL champion Green Bay Packers, best team in the NFL that season, winning games on a consistent basis, on a weekly basis by double-digit points, blowing people out, had a game on the road in Carolina. The Panthers weren't that good that season. I think it was Cam Newton's rookie season. So you got the defending Super Bowl champions on the road against a team rebuilding. They're a 19-point favorite. And sure enough, no, excuse me, a 16-point favorite. Green Bay is favored by 16 points in this game. I took the over. I took Green Bay plus the points. And sure enough, late in the fourth quarter, with about 2.5 minutes to go, Green Bay is covering the spread. The Packers have a 33-14 lead over the Carolina Panthers. And then Cam Newton took the Carolina Panthers down the field, and they scored a meaningless, to me anyway, touchdown to cut the lead from 33-14 to 33-21. And then the clock runs out. Green Bay gets the ball back. Aaron Rodgers takes a knee. The clock expires. The game is over. The final score, Green Bay 33, Carolina 21, and I just lost $500. Fuck you, Cam Newton. And that's the way it goes. Bad beats. But my point is, Mainstream sports outlets are no longer trying to pretend that motherfuckers are not gambling on these games. They openly talk about it now. So that taboo subject of having professional sports in Las Vegas is over now. They literally have two professional sports teams in Las Vegas already. The Las Vegas Golden Knights, who are currently up 1-0 on the Florida Panthers in the Stanley Cup Finals. I told you, I watch everything. And the Las Vegas Raiders moved from Oakland to Las Vegas about 2 or 3 seasons ago. And the Oakland A's, continuing that sports exodus out of Oakland, California, that makes me sad because I used to live there. The Oakland A's are moving to Las Vegas as well. So now, you got a hockey team, a football team, you're about to get a baseball team. It makes perfect sense to get a basketball team. So I'm looking at Seattle and Las Vegas as potential expansion destinations for the NBA. Now, going back to Adam Silver and his fraudulent bullshit midseason tournament, I think they're using this as a way to gauge interest and try to feel out where can we put a team at and be successful and make money. So I can look at Las Vegas, Seattle. Maybe they might want to go back to Vancouver. They tried that before with the Vancouver Grizzlies. Didn't work. They moved to Memphis. Pittsburgh doesn't have a basketball team. Kansas City, Buffalo, Tampa. If you remember a couple of seasons ago, the Raptors during the pandemic, coming out of the pandemic, the Raptors played in Tampa for about one season. So I don't know. I'm just throwing cities out there for potential destinations because, as Adam Silver said, we don't even know where the neutral site games are going to be for this midseason tournament. Charles Barkley asked him a follow-up question, which to me sounded pre-approved, like a brand new Discover card. Charles Barkley asked two questions. The first question was, what teams are going to be involved in the midseason tournament? Is it just going to be the bad lower half teams or just the good teams? Adam Silver said every team in the NBA, all 30 teams, are going to be participating in the midseason tournament. That's question number one. Question number two was that Barkley asked, we already got this issue with load management, with guys openly taking games off, despite the fact that they're healthy. They're not injured. They could play in this game if they really wanted to. They just don't want to. We already have an issue with load management. In what way does the midseason tournament incentivize guys to want to play in the tournament? Adam Silver had two answers. Number one, he said the games do count towards the regular season record, as I already said. And the second thing was, and I literally laughed out loud when he said this, he said there's going to be a cash prize. There's going to be money on the line for the players in the tournament. The reason I laughed out loud is these motherfuckers are already making $40 million a year. Even like baseline, middle of the road, run of the mill, rudimentary, nickel and dime players are making somewhere in the neighborhood of like at least $25 million a season. You got role players getting paid like superstars of 20 or 25 years ago. Max contracts for a dude coming off the bench, maybe giving you 20 minutes a game and scoring about maybe 10 points. He's making about $25 million a season. So how much money are you going to put on the line to motivate these guys to want to even play in this shit and take it seriously? As Barkley said, it's a good question. He didn't follow up on it because he understands I'm talking to my boss right now. He wasn't very aggressive in the follow-up, but he did ask the question. I'll give him credit for that. Like he said, what incentive would anyone have to play in this tournament and go all out? And we already have an issue with load management. Motherfuckers already don't want to play in the regular season. And now you're going to put in some phony Mickey Mouse bullshit midseason tournament? Who cares? It's a participation trophy, basically. Adam Silver tried to equate it to an early season college basketball tournament. And he said, you know, players do play hard in those tournaments. Two things, Adam. Number one, most college players aren't getting paid. Unless they have a name and likeness deal, an NIL deal, most college players aren't getting paid. So their incentive is to go out there and play hard every single game. They're auditioning for the NBA in most cases. Or this might be the last time most of these guys play high-level team organized basketball. So they're going to go out and play hard regardless. That's number one. Number two, can you name the team, whoever the fuck it was, that won the Maui Invitational last season? Pop quiz. If somebody put you on the spot, put a gun to your head and say, quick, you got 5 seconds to tell me what team won the Great Alaskan Shootout last season, or else I'm going to shoot you in the fucking head. You're going to die. No one knows who won the Great Alaskan Shootout last season or any season. You'd have to look that up. The Maui Invitational, the early season NIT, the Coaches Against Cancer Classic. No one cares about that shit. That's a false equivalency. You cannot say that this midseason basketball tournament is going to be on par with an early season college basketball tournament. Nobody fucking cares. The only thing that matters is what's going on right now. The NBA Finals, the NBA Playoffs. That's what players get judged on. You mean to tell me, let's say, I don't know, the Lakers win the midseason tournament last year. You mean to tell me, and well, I'm going to go ahead and stop myself because I already know what would happen if the Lakers were to win the first ever midseason NBA basketball tournament that doesn't even have a name, doesn't even have an official site of where the games are going to be played. If the Lakers won, in particular, if LeBron James won, trust and believe, the witnesses, the LeBron stands, the Jamesites, they're going to try to use that as collateral in their argument that LeBron is better than Michael Jordan. I can hear it now. Did Michael Jordan ever win a midseason NBA tournament? I can hear that dumbass ignorant shit right now. Nick Wright, Shannon Sharp, Colin Cowherd, some slack-jawed yokel on television is going to say that shit with a straight face. Jesus Christ, man. This guy sat there. Straight face, serious as all get out, legitimately tried to sell the people, the public, and Grant Hill, Charles Barkley, and Shaquille O'Neal, and Matt Weiner on the idea that a midseason NBA basketball tournament with no name and no official site is on par with the NBA Finals. It's just as good as winning the Larry O'Brien Trophy. You know what that was? And going back and watching it and looking at the reactions of Shaq and Barkley and Grant Hill, you can tell by the looks on their faces, they know this is bullshit. This is some cockamamie bullshit. This doesn't make any sense whatsoever. This is garbage. This is a money grab, fake, phony, fraudulent. This doesn't really mean anything. You know that's what's going through their heads. Their body language indicated that. But we all been there before. How many times have you been at work and your boss, like the main boss, the guy that runs everything, the guy that signs the checks, the guy that everybody reports to, comes in and tries to deliver some kind of rah-rah speech to everybody and talk about some brand new idea, some genius idea he just came up with that's going to facilitate growth, that's going to impact everybody's daily life at work, that's going to make everybody's job easier. It's going to improve everything. This grand idea that's going to increase production and make everybody's life easier. At least in his mind, it will. We all been there before. We all have been at work on the job and listening to one of the main bosses or the main boss articulate some grand idea he has that he thinks, or he at least is trying to sell to all of us, is going to benefit the people, the workers, the production guys. And we all know it's bullshit, but you really can't say anything. You really can't say anything because you got to pay your light bill next week. You got to pay your car note. You need some place to live at, and this job right now is currently paying you. So you can't stand up and say, hey, man, everything you're saying is complete bullshit. So you got to sit there and just take it. Just listen. Let him talk. Let him get it off his chest. In his mind, in his world, everything he's saying makes perfect sense. But you and all your coworkers know it's nothing. It's garbage. It's completely erroneous. It's stupid. It's nonsensical. It doesn't benefit anybody except him. It benefits him. He's going to make more money off of this. You're not going to make anything off of this. We all been there before. Welcome to corporate America. One more thing before I wrap up all things basketball here on the Deion Gordon podcast. Kyrie Irving apparently is campaigning for LeBron James to come play in Dallas for the Mavericks. Number one, Kyrie is a free agent. There's no guarantee they're going to bring him back. Number two, LeBron has one more year on his contract playing for the Lakers, coinciding with his son Bronny playing his first season for the USC Trojans. USC as in University of Southern California. So I would think that LeBron would want to remain in Southern California himself and play for the Lakers so he can go watch his son play basketball. My prediction is LeBron's going to play one more year for the Lakers. Bronny's going to play one year for USC, declare his eligibility to go play for the NBA draft in 2024. Whatever team he gets drafted by, LeBron is going to campaign his way to go play for that team. That's my prediction. That's what I see happening. I do not see LeBron going to Dallas. Number one, why would the Lakers trade LeBron to Dallas? That's another Western Conference team. Why would you try to help out your competition? Doesn't make any sense. And from a basketball standpoint for Dallas, you mean to tell me you're going to have LeBron, Kyrie Irving, and Luka Doncic on the court? That's three guys that, number one, need the basketball in their hands based on the way they play basketball. And number two, three guys that really aren't that interested in playing defense. At this stage of the game, LeBron plays some pretty good defense in the playoffs, here and there, every now and then, but at 38 and going to be 39 next season, he's not giving you 100% effort on that side of the floor. Luka Doncic couldn't guard a parked car. Kyrie Irving never was known as a great defender, great ball handler, great shooter, great offensive player. Same thing with Luka, but neither guy has never been known as a defensive stalwart. So explain to me how this would happen. You don't, as the rules dictate, you're only allowed to play basketball with one basketball. The same thing I said about Russell Westbrook coming to the Lakers a couple years ago. I said this is not going to work. The rules of the game state only one basketball is allowed to be used during a regulation 48-minute NBA basketball game. If I got three guys on my team that need the basketball in their hands to function, I don't have a good basketball team, and all three of those guys can't guard anybody. That's why Dallas missed the playoffs this season. A lot of people, because they don't like Kyrie Irving, falsely blame him for Dallas missing the playoffs. That's lazy. It's easy to look at the win-loss record and say, well, the team took a nosedive once they acquired Kyrie Irving. It requires more nuance to look at everybody they gave up, most notably Spencer Dinwiddie, a great team basketball player, a very good perimeter wing defender. They had no defense. Dallas gave up their defense once they brought in Kyrie Irving. It was a nonsensical, stupid, dumbass trade. Didn't make any sense. That's why the team fell off. They couldn't guard anybody. And bringing in LeBron is not going to help that. So to me, I look at that as a rumor, something to talk about in between NBA Finals games, the media being bored, and I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it should happen. It wouldn't make sense to me if it did happen. So with all that being said, it's going to happen. LeBron James is going to be traded to the Dallas Mavericks because it makes no fucking sense, so therefore it makes sense. So with all that being said, this concludes this edition of the Deion Gordon Podcast. Eternally grateful, always humble, and very much appreciative. And remember, at all times, to tread lightly like a woodpecker with a headache. Until next time, picture me rolling. I'm out.